Good evening.
How are you guys?
Hello.
We're waiting just for you guys to come to start. Okay, well, I have 7 o'clock, so I will call to order the March meeting of the City of Alexandria's Transportation Commission. We don't have, let's see, what do we do? We'll start with the public hearing. Anyone interested in making a comment, if you could identify yourself by completing the form that's at the table. Yes?
I did the form.
Oh, you did the form? Oh. Ms. Duggan? Is it Duggan? Please stand or wherever you feel comfortable.
I'm here on behalf of my neighbors, Old Town Line Free Student Association, and it's just a plea for the smart brains on transportation to help us. You're going to
I missed the first part. This is one.
A plea you guys who are way smarter at these transportation things than we are to help us. You're going to get briefed today on the Route 1 South affordable housing issue. I sat in and listened to the way that was presented at another city meeting, and several people who watched it online were a little perplexed because we sort of felt like our concerns regarding transportation and congestion were being minimized. And this is in the southwest end of Old Town, like between Duke Street going to Church Street, Route 1 and Washington Street. Down there at the end, we're walled in on two sides. Traffic is completely gridlocked, especially in the afternoon rush hour, with people trying to get to Gibbon, all kinds of illegal ways against turn signs and everything to get to Gibbon to get to the Beltway. There is a proposed project that would triple the density for certain blocks in our neighborhood, triple the density of affordable housing units saved. And we think it's a little dismissive just to say, don't worry about it, transportation concerns will be addressed in the individual DSUPs. We're wondering if the city has taken a serious look at overall traffic in Old Town and what can be done to mitigate it, because it affects not just the residents and the employers and businesses, but it affects all of the tourists and visitors who keep seeing Alexandria at the top of the list of go-to places. And honestly, I have friends who are already starting to say, I don't want to come to Old Town, it's too much of a hassle in terms of traffic and congestion and parking, kind of like the way people talk about DC. We don't want that to be the end result. So all I'm asking, when you hear about this project, I know Melissa's aware of it because she spent a lot of time with us too, and I very much appreciated your comments at the last minute, and I passed them on. But we need to do something about traffic in Old Town and not just wish it away and not just say everyone's going to ride a bike or be a pedestrian. The traffic's not just generated by us, it's coming regionally, and we can't control that. But it's significantly affecting our quality of life when many afternoons to get 8 blocks from Duke Street to church can take 45 minutes to go 8 blocks. We need some help. That's all.
Thank you. And you mentioned that Melissa has some specific issues that the commission can react to. My preference is specificity, and I was having a hard time trying to get that, but do you have the level of detail?
Well, I'm happy to, in the context, because I think it appears as a, I had made a note myself to sort of talk about it. It's a consent item, right? So there's a write-up, but there wasn't necessarily going to be a conversation, so I was going to share
some
of my thoughts.
Well, if you have something to share, I think it would be helpful, but to try to let the commission get a full context of what the issues are. I do understand the traffic conditions in Old Town, but the more specificity we have, the better off we are in trying to move something forward or to provide the city staff with some guidance on it.
Yeah.
But thank you for your comment. I appreciate that. Anyone else? So we will close the public comment period. The next item on the agenda will be the consideration of the minutes from the February 21st meeting. Does anyone have any changes that they would like to put forward?
I wanted to add, I was looking through it. There were comments about the multimodal bridge, and Commissioner Brown was asking a couple of questions on the topic. However, there was an answer provided by Ramiro Rios, which wasn't encapsulated in here. Maybe I'm just being a little pedantic, but he was asking about the height of the bridge and kind of why Norfolk Southern wanted it a certain way, and the answer was because of the piles of the bridge, and that's not in the minutes. That's something I didn't ask.
Okay, the location of the pole.
Exactly, because you answered the question that way. That was something that I didn't answer, and it's just not in the minutes. So I'd like to add that as well.
Well, okay.
Can you tell me what page that goes on?
Number 3.
Oh, the opening paragraph in 4. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And at the bottom it says, you know, I said that there's a thoroughbred transit facility, etc. And then Brown asked if there's a clearance issue, but there's no comment from city staff there. That was, I think, was relevant.
Okay. We'll add that.
Do you have enough information?
Yes.
To make this
change? Yeah.
Okay.
Great.
Do we have a motion to accept the minutes as modified by Commissioner Chappick?
I'll make a motion to accept the minutes as modified.
Okay. We have a second?
A second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay, we're ready for the consent items. Does anyone have a particular area of interest that you'd like us to explore further or pull for separate discussion? I think we heard some comment about the item. For the Route 1 corridor, other than item which we'll call that D for the record, are there any other items that anyone would like to see discussed further, or is D the only one that we would like to have a more detailed discussion on?
I'd be interested in the dockless bike share. I don't know how much that was discussed in the past. It's been in the news a lot lately, in D.C. and in other cities. In fact, there's an article in the Wall Street Journal yesterday about the challenges of some of these dockless bike sharing programs, and I'd be interested maybe in, I don't know how much we covered that in the last meeting, or, you know, being the new guy, but...
Understood. Okay. No, we can certainly have that one, so we'll go with a discussion on B and D. Do that?
Okay.
Dr. Fletcher.
Okay. So basically, we have started to do some research regarding the management models that other cities are using. Especially, we're very eager to learn the outcomes of the DC, project. And so, right now, what city staff is doing some research on how to manage, how their cities are managing, what kind of model is more effective for managing these types of systems, and also the legal framework that would be needed if it was to be adopted in Alexandria. But city staff is waiting for DC to finalize its pilot program and see what the outcome is, so that we can actually make a better, more informed decision. In last meetings, we haven't really covered this. We've had some discussions.
It's a basic discussion, but nothing much more than
right.
I mentioned.
But this item was, the objective of the item was to inform the commissioners that staff is working on it, and that we're starting to look into the legal issues and the management framework that we could adopt in the future, or not, depending on what the city decides.
And there's also at the beginning of the month of April, there's a national cities only event in Austin for cities that are looking into dockless and cities that are experiencing it to share ideas and stories. And so after that, we'll have a little bit more information about what's going on in other cities as well.
Okay. And I'm just curious, there's also, I know they just popped up in DC in just the last month or so, the electric scooters, scooter option, which I know Line Bike is into, and I think there's another
company. There's an R1 in the Line Bike, yes, which is actually a question, but you finish yours first.
Oh, no, sorry. So I was just, I don't know if that's part of your study, but I would encourage you, sounds like that's becoming more popular as an option, and just pass that along.
The other day, the woman in front of me across Pennsylvania Avenue was struck by someone on a scooter.
Oof.
They weren't paying attention to the street signs. We all had the white hand to walk, and they were less than cautious with their operation. Do we know if DC has more than just those two, and when the pilot would end, so that we would have an idea of the time frame for the study?
For the Douglas Venture?
For the Douglas, the DC's Douglas.
Right.
They have about
Douglas and
five
April,
different
right?
companies?
Oh, it is
five or six
five
different
companies. Yeah.
There's just two that come to mind, the lime and the orange ones, with the ones I see in Lime by my office.
So there's Lime Bike, Spin, Mobike, Ofo.
Spin, what is it called? Jump.
Jump.
The electric assist.
The electric assist bike, and then I think with the scooter one,
and
that's
scooter,
six.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there may be more
when
coming.
When the pilot may end?
April.
Oh, April this
yeah.
year. Oh, okay.
Yes.
But
I
they
think
might
it's mid-April.
Renew it.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so they're like their initial study period is ending, but they're going to come out of that probably with as many questions as they have answers. So, some of the things, like speaking as a transportation commissioner / community member, having options for everyone is really important. So this presents an opportunity for the public and the private sector to partner to provide better options. But what we see in DC, but also in other places, is several kinds of negative externality that need to be addressed through a regulatory framework of some sort. The bicycles or vehicles being parked in the middle of sidewalks, obstructing pedestrian right-of-way, which can particularly be a problem for people with vision disabilities, people who need to know where their clear routes are, not knowing where these particular vehicles are going to be placed, and assorted other things. But we're hoping that we get some, what's the word, like we see what DC takes as their tack and maybe take a leaf from that. From that approach.
Is DDOT doing this?
Mm-hmm.
And it would be later on this year you all will come back after DC does their thing?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Do you know the time frame that we may get our update?
Not sure yet.
Right. It really just depends on if they renew this pilot and they don't put out a report yet, we're kind of waiting.
Oh, you're really tied to their activity.
We want to see what's happening there, but also there's a lot going on in other cities, so let them work out the kinks and then report back to us. So.
Right.
Good to take advantage of somebody else's lessons learned.
DDOT is struggling to get data from the vendors in even under the agreements that they already have, which is going to be a challenge for Alexandria as well. And it's an annoying challenge because the data could actually help us all figure out how used are these services and where are people going with them and where are the problem areas. And right now it's a lot of anecdote rather than being able to analyze the information.
All right, thank you for that. Item D, Route 1 South Portal Housing. Unless there's a staff update, that could be more than what we have here, then perhaps you can do.
Do you have any specific questions about?
Maybe we could then go to your the feedback you were able to obtain.
Yeah, I just wanted to share. So for folks who weren't involved, are people familiar with the Route 1 South Affordable Housing Strategy process? Like.
we have a couple new members, so since we have time on our meeting today, maybe
go over the big picture.
A little bit of a background might be helpful for everyone.
Yeah. So in essence, in this particular neighborhood, Ms. Dugan's neighborhood, there are a small handful of properties that provide affordable housing today. And are essentially in danger of no longer providing affordable housing in the future, based on just expiration of existing agreements that those property owners have with the federal government. One of them is due to expire soon, and another one of them is already technically expired and it's being renewed on a year-by-year basis. So what that creates is a lot of uncertainty of how sustainable and ongoing that affordable housing is going to be. So staff initiated this process with the neighborhood, fairly constrained, both geographically constrained, it's a really small planning process geographically, and topically constrained process to pre-plan to help these property owners essentially get certainty from the neighborhood and from the city on what they could potentially do with this property in the future that could help them actually retain the affordability of the housing stock there. So what that means isn't necessarily retaining the buildings that are already there, but we know how many units are there that are affordable today, and the idea for the, from the citywide perspective is to not lose affordability. So Ms. Dugan and I participated in, there's been several different types of community outreach and engagement that was sort of culminated in slash was a big emphasis was a charrette week. So there was a week of morning meetings, staff working all day, evening public engagement activities. And there's yet more to come coming out of that, and it sort of ended awkwardly because there was a windstorm, and so the last Friday of meetings didn't happen, and part of it got rescheduled, part of it didn't get rescheduled. But the goal being that staff could take what they learned from this, from these processes, create a draft plan around this very small area, and get more community feedback on that draft plan, and really produce in a short period of time a plan that council can approve that sets out that framework so those owners of those properties can move forward with something in the future that actually allows them to conserve affordability on those sites.
So, or at least reduces uncertainty.
Right. Makes it more... more likely that their bottom line will work out so they can actually move that forward, because there's nothing right now preventing them from just redeveloping these sites as townhomes at $1 million a pop. So there's the existing zoning that'll let them do what they will do, and then there's what the city really wants them to do, and the planning process is try to connect those two dots. Very much a part of the community conversation, and what I particularly wanted to emphasize, because it doesn't come out quite strongly enough in the summary document for you all, is that the traffic concerns of the neighborhood are quite quite severe, and so the issues are severe. The concern with them is pronounced throughout all community members who engaged in the process. And there are different kinds of traffic concerns for this neighborhood than we see in a lot of neighborhoods in Alexandria, because this is Route 1 South. Several community members really preferred to call it South Patrick Street because it's their neighborhood street, and they really went forward with trying to capture the fact that if we really thought of it as a neighborhood street and not this highway, then it might change the way we visualize that. Because of the nature of that regional route, there are regional level traffic impacts that are hitting this neighborhood that aren't necessarily easily solved by some bulb outs or the kinds of pedestrian and streetscape improvements which were heavily discussed, and a lot of great ideas were created during that process. So there's some really good drawings, and this stuff is all available online. There's some really good diagrams that came out of the community process that identify problem areas, intersection by intersection, and potential solutions that relate to how to improve crossings, how to change the speed of traffic, potentially how to stripe lanes narrower or otherwise to slow and traffic calm. But the underlying challenge that staff is experiencing, as I see it, is that they can only do so much with this plan and with the kinds of techniques that you can attach to redevelopment of these sites, because often through redevelopment we get people to invest in transportation improvements. So the redevelopment of the sites will potentially get us much wider sidewalk, and two rows of street trees were discussed to go along Route 1 to buffer the community from and pedestrians from the people driving. Lots of different techniques were talked about that you can get from development, or we can get through through streetscape improvement programs that the city would fund. But the tough nut to crack is the regional traffic, and there one of the approaches mentioned by community members during the process was congestion pricing or tolling on Route 1. For anyone who is a through traveler through Alexandria and who is not actually coming to Alexandria, I am personally skeptical that that's a feasible thing for us to implement, because I mean, if London can't implement congestion pricing and if New York City can't implement congestion pricing, Alexandria is not way up there on the on the list of cities that's likely to pull it off for their local streets. But it definitely resonated as a tension that's not 100% resolved by this. The impression I get, though, from staff and from this write-up is that staff are not waiting around for the plan to figure out how to address some of these traffic challenges. So they're really trying to lay out a short-term, the best possible sequence of tactics in the short term that they can start to roll out in the neighborhood to improve the conditions as they stand. So that's I guess a bigger picture of the combination of challenges that I want to make sure folks had a sense of. And does anyone have questions about
with the proposal to sort of reconfigure the type of housing that's there? Mm-hmm. Is it anticipated that the density would go up or remain the same or go down?
It's anticipated that the density would go up on those sites. Most what we see in planning processes and what we do in other small area plans is we look at what it would take for a development to pencil out. And for affordable housing, another example of this you might see in the Adkins site process and negotiations that ARHA's going through. You see a site that has affordable housing on it today, and in order to preserve on-site the number of units that are already there today, in a future redevelopment, they actually have to put a lot of market rate housing on that site. And I don't know how those numbers totally end up in terms of total number of market rate. That site is near metro, so there's a lot of there are other reasons why you want density there. But the long and the short of it is, affordable housing to be sustainable needs these other sources of cash flow. And so for the owners of those properties to put the money that will be needed to go into preserving affordability over the long term, they're going to need market rate units there to help pay for it. So those sites will almost certainly, unless there's some benefactor who wants to pump millions of dollars into the projects just for the sake of affordable housing, for them to pencil out, they're going to need market rate units too.
And to better understand the traffic issue and the density, which I think everyone would agree is fairly high, if you take the normal traffic on Route 1 South, with or without the population that is there today, is the proposed change going to significantly increase the volume of traffic in that area, or is it the fact that the traffic will increase over time as natural increases have been predicted to affect the traffic that I think Ms. Dugan was trying to share with us? I'm trying to better characterize what the traffic issues are beyond the acceptance that everyone around the table probably would agree. It's very dense, and I also agree to implement some type of a market strategy to it is beyond the realm of possibility at this point.
I know I have my hunch, but I don't know if staff wants to give their opinion first or second, or if my hunch matters.
What we're seeing is that most of the traffic and the congestion on Route 1 is regional traffic trying to get out of Alexandria. It's not necessarily
the local traffic. That's what I was really trying to get at, and not that I'm trying to split this into too many pieces, but is the regional traffic is an issue I think we would be able to deal with as a commission. If there was an incremental increase as a result of the configuration change from affordable to not affordable, or a mix of housing, I do think that would be within our scope. But just traffic and then separating out affordable versus not affordable housing, or market rate housing, affordable housing, I'm not sure if that's within our purview. So that's the reason why I'm carving out that question in the way that I did. And if other members feel differently, please share that, but I'm trying to differentiate what we as the commission should be focusing on versus what are real issues in the community, but not necessarily that of transportation commission activities.
Can I ask a follow-up question
sure.
about the timeline?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering if either staff or Melissa, you can provide more detail on kind of where we are in within this process and next steps, and how some of the short-term solutions that are proposed kind of align with that timeline.
So the timeline of the planning process was hoped to conclude and go to council in June. I don't know if it will, because staff are definitely synthesizing community input that they got through thus far, and they are planning and executing continued follow-up outreach to the residents of those particular parcels, and possibly to some other stakeholder groups. I'm not entirely sure what the specific meetings are that they're engaging on, but it was in response to the fact that folks participating in the Charette Week, which is the really intense time, wanted more follow-up and felt like there was some, it was just going a little too fast. So that's the overall hoped for time frame for completing a plan for this area. Maybe staff can then talk about the implementation of short-term actions.
Right, so there are some short-term actions that we think we can do within the first couple years. There are larger items that are going to need funding, so we'll have to plan out years to do some of those improvements, and then there are longer term elements that would be funded through development.
If I may, my name is Jose Carlos Ayala. I'm part of the core team for this project that we are talking about. We are currently evaluating all these potential issues with transportation, and we are going to go back to the community to talk about the specifics of transportation as well as density. We are currently working with TES to see what kind of improvement can be provided, and we are also evaluating the schedule. We are very we wanted to make sure that we address all the concerns of the community, and that might take a little bit longer than we anticipated to strategic plan. I just want to mention too, this is not a small area plan, this is a strategic plan, in which is basically focused on preservation of affordable housing in the area. Along with that, we are trying to address safety of pedestrians and bicyclists and to the neighborhood streets in the area. And as it's been mentioned, we have seen so far that certainly the vast majority of the traffic from regional, going, passing through Alexandria, going to DC and getting out to Fairfax. So, but we're going to be talking a lot more. We don't have a specific days and time yet, but we will be addressing, we will be sending information to the community on the next step. So.
Can I ask on page 3, but the measures that are under consideration, like the Hawk signal and all this stuff, well, what's the time frame on that?
That's what Hillary was talking about in terms of the next 2 years.
Okay.
So within a couple of years of approving the plan, is that what you mean by that? Or just within a couple of years of now?
I mean, there are some things like crosswalk striping that we can get done within the first year. Yeah, we can start working on some of that now. But some of the signals are more expensive.
Anything,
maybe need to be
like an infrastructure change would take time, and that would be the later part of it.
But yeah, like the LPI stuff, I mean, I know you're looking to set up a policy to do that, but like LPI is...
We're already evaluating that.
Yeah.
And my personal interest, because I think it would be effective, is the restriping on Route 1. How feasible is that at this point?
We're looking into that. Route 1 was recently resurfaced, so while restriping seems like an easy thing to do, it would be grinding out every single marking on Route 1,
right.
And it would be a full, we'd need to do a full design of what it would look like, so mm-hmm. that's not something that would happen within the next year.
Yeah.
There's certainly a lot of that's more of a medium term idea if we even move forward with it mm-hmm. in terms of a recommendation.
Yeah. I still think that, I mean, so putting on my commissioner opinion hat, I think that would be huge. So the idea is that the lanes on Route 1 are really wide, so they encourage people to speed. They're already coming off of the highway, like the freeway, whatever's, and they and instead of going 25, they're going 35, 45, sometimes 50 miles an hour, like running up to the lights. And so if we can get those lanes narrower, it's going to visually change people's behavior. And it would also buy us space that we could, even if it's striped and not with curb stuff, a pedestrian refuge, which you list here as a description. So in that wide street, there would be space for someone that would be clearly not where cars are supposed to be, that would make it safer for them during their crossing. But, I mean, in the grand scheme, it would be great to reclaim space on Route 1 that can be saved from restriping and to turn that into sidewalk or turn that into landscaped zone in the middle or whatever else that's actual hardscape. But yeah, I mean, cost-wise and timing it. I hope that it doesn't get put aside permanently because it's difficult to do, because I think it's ultimately one of the only ways we're going to have to slow vehicles down on that road. So you certainly can't do it with a sign that says 25.
That's correct. We have to just prioritize that this project that kind of, you know, it was originally supposed to be affordable housing. There's a lot of transportation elements that always come up in community conversation.
Yep.
So now this is something that staff has to figure out how it fits in the work plans and the budgets that have already been approved.
Yep.
And the other hundreds of projects that are going on right now.
Yep, absolutely.
I know last time we talked about kind of the prioritization for Vision Zero and the work plan that already existed on that. Just curious, sort of what's the overlap between some of the routes described here and the priority areas in that plan?
There was one intersection in the study area or in the project area that is a high vehicle-vehicle crash intersection that was identified, and that was Route 1 and Gibbon. Route 1, the entire corridor of Route 1 was one of our high crash corridors in the city, as are most of our large arterial streets were identified as high crash corridors. So that's where, really, for staff, our main focus. You know, we did hear a lot, you know, comments of different elements on the side streets, but I think Route 1, if we have to prioritize where we're going to put our energy and money, I think Route 1 is really probably the key segment here.
Now, given the classification of Route 1, what ability does the city have to take action by its own decision as opposed to working through the state or it's on the region level? I honestly don't know that, but what flexibility do we have for Route 1 improvements or actions on Route 1 that we can make as the city of Alexandria itself?
We have authority.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's just south of this area where VDOT.
Oh,
VDOT
okay, so it's on our side of the line. Okay,
great.
Well, that's good. Thank you.
And I just have a follow-up question, I think, to what you said in terms of jurisdiction. And I know in terms of density, and there's a formula that's used in terms of whatever becomes of these units, and if they become denser units, which sounds like that's what's going to happen. But is the parking in that side of it, and I guess maybe just the street park, what falls under our jurisdiction? There's a street parking component, and there's a parking component of, I guess, within the units themselves. I'm just curious as to how that works. Do we have any kind of role in that, or is that, you know, something that falls under, I guess, planning and zoning?
Well, there's a separate parking group for the city that focuses on that. We are presented with outcomes of studies. Is that a good way of characterizing it? But we're not actively engaged in that activity itself. But I'll say if it has a transportation impact to it, then that would certainly be something we would discuss. But usually the city staff does a very good job of delineating which activities fall into the parking group, which would really be an action item for the commission.
And so elaborating on that, this commission and other groups inform staff's relatively recent update to residential parking requirements. So that's a policy on the books, which you could check out to see what the formulas are that would be what are used to determine the appropriate amount of parking for a given type of residential unit based on its proximity to transit and that sort of thing. And so there was a public process around that. We recently completed a similar process for commercial parking, and there was a task force assigned for that. And so a task force with people from lots of different types of commissions and stakeholder groups. and the Traffic and Parking Board is the other board that he was referring to, and they are the on-street sort of regulatory body decision makers. And James is representative there.
And this is an area that has come before us a few times. I know we talked about the Franklin and Alfred Street intersection that you guys are planning to do some curb striping to. Actually, I think you may have told the guy at the meeting, you followed up with him on that. But yeah, there's a lot of issues here, and we've even talked to APD about it as well, because there was a no-turn sign on Green Street that we talked about and a few other things. But yeah, I think this is the issue. I think always boils down to the regional traffic that just flows through there, and we're sort of limited as to what we can and can't do right now, given available resources and budget.
Did anybody ask about having, like, the walk signal be the default when the people trying to get across Route 1, because it doesn't happen?
That wasn't, I mean, we never got sort of into that level of detail on it, because the way sort of the TMP board works is it's very sort of issue driven, and it's like this intersection, this crosswalk comes up because it's very sort of citizen driven, whereas like this commission takes more of like a broader approach, and we very rarely do that unless it's something like Vision Zero or something.
If I may, one of the goals of the plan is to teach back the community. We see that this road is a barrier from one side to the other, and to improve that, which is part of the plan, is to create that connection between a safe connection, pedestrian connection, bicycling from one side to the other. So we are looking at different ways to stitch those two pieces together in a way that will improve the quality of the crossing one side to the other, so people have the same benefit to enjoy the facilities in the area.
I might just make the walk signal be the default, you know, when folks are trying to cross.
Looking at timing of the signals is something that we're doing right now as part of this plan, looking at where an LPI is appropriate. But one thing you have to remember with the walk signal is with no pedestrian refuge, it's a very long crossing of Route 1, and if there are no pedestrians there, you're holding the vehicles back even more and then creating more congestion in the neighborhoods, which was something that the community was concerned about. So in terms of thinking about street design, you know, we're trying to make sure that we're considering all users and the people that live in the neighborhoods that are dealing with all of the traffic trying to get out and kind of cutting through on those streets. So we look at things like, is having the walk signal come on all the time appropriate, or is something like an LPI where a pedestrian pushes a button but then they get conflict-free crossing time, what's a better balance for these particular locations? So those are all things that staff are looking at as part of this process.
Any other discussion on item D? Thank you. Commission updates. Vice Chair?
I'm good.
Okay.
Nothing for you here.
Oh, good.
Nothing from TMP. Okay.
A negative from you as well. All right.
Well, I have a very brief update.
That's good.
The Eisenhower West Landmark Van Dorn Policy the Ad Hoc Implementation Advisory Group has its next meeting scheduled for Thursday, May 24th, 7 till 9 p.m. that evening. Location or agenda have not yet been published. I got this email this afternoon. But I obviously at least will meet once more before, so I'll make sure to give you an update as to what I found by then.
You get the obligatory pass through.
Yeah. Don't worry, it won't be long.
Yeah. And I know we haven't given you an assignment yet, but do you have anything to share?
No updates.
Okay. Let's see. I have two items. We had a public hearing for the DASH proposed service changes and fare increase scheduled for the day we had the storm. So that is now rescheduled for next Wednesday. That's at the high school off of Beauregard Street, and that is next Wednesday, the 4th of April. And the second meeting date is North End, and I don't recall what that is, but it's on the DASH website, but it's a public meeting to get feedback on the proposed changes, which I think I had mentioned before as far as an increase in the fare. the implementation of a senior citizen fair and continuation of services for C.C. Williams High School and that continue on. The other item, there's a meeting next week for the Potomac Yard Project that I was asked, where I was asked to submit a name, and I volunteered since I didn't have a chance to provide city staff with a recommendation. I haven't had this meeting, well, we had the meeting when it was scheduled the week after we normally would. But if there's someone who would like to accept that responsibility or challenges as part of their task, I would certainly welcome that. But I will be there representing the Transportation Commission next week at the community center, and I forget the name of it, that's my
Charleston.
Charleston.
Thank you, yes.
What date is that?
It'd be next Wednesday the 4th, 6 to 8. And the city manager will be there to present some of the significant financial issues along with other members of the city staff, but the city manager will be there specifically to deal with cost changes along with the extension of the timeline for that, which is now about an additional two years beyond their projected date.
Bummer.
And from that point on, I understand the meetings should probably be on a quarterly basis to give people an idea of what the commitment would be if you're interested in that particular one. But I'll report back at the next meeting. But if someone else would like to be there to observe, you're more than welcome. All right, up here. Item 5, resurfacing and complete streets.
Good evening. My name is Mary Martin. I'm the Division Chief of Public Works Services for TESS. And I wanted to give you guys an update on our paving program and consider their coordination efforts with the Complete Streets program. From here, in 2014, City Council moved a significant portion of our paving budget from our operating to a capital program budget, and since 2014 they've increased the funding for our paving program to try to hit a $6 million per year mark. And what that means for us basically is that we're paving a lot more streets and we're moving quickly through the city, so that requires more coordination with various stakeholders throughout the city. Here we have a map of our current fiscal year paving and fiscal years 2019 through 2021. So you can see we use this tool a lot when we meet with our various stakeholders because it gives a visual so they can identify where their projects are, and we can easily identify any conflicts that we might have. Some other tools that we use for coordination on the paving program, like I just showed the GIS, we also have regular meetings with various stakeholders. The city is working on a permit system upgrade that will incorporate utility permits, development permits, capital projects. The Department of Project Implementation does capital projects, complete streets. The paving program will all be together in a GIS format so that they'll be able to see when a permit comes in what projects are in the pipeline and what's going to impact that construction and how that will impact our roadway.
Who are the key stakeholders in that bullet, regular meetings with key stakeholders?
Utility companies, so Washington Gas, Virginia American Water, Complete Streets, the Development Services, the Department of Project Implementation.
So is it just those four at the bottom that you're thinking about? That's what that's referring to? Or
yes.
Are there other? Okay.
So the process for us on our paving coordination is we develop a paving schedule based on a three-year survey of our streets. We have a consultant that came in 2016 and analyzed all the streets and developed a paving PCI, paving condition index, and it basically assigns it's a rating system from 1 to 100. So every street is given a number, and from there we rank them, 1 being very poor condition, 100 being it was just paved. So we use those numbers to identify what roads we're going to pave next, and then from there we distribute that list to those stakeholders and say, okay, here's our list of paving. What do you have that's coming up so that we can identify any conflicts. The goal here is to allow the utility companies to do their construction, allow the development to do their cuts, and allow Complete Streets to perform their public outreach so that the construction is done when we pave, and then once we pave, we have the new striping plan or whatever plan is going to go, whatever striping is going to go back on the street is in place. Sometimes we have to adjust the schedule if we can. For example, if we know that there's a gas project that's going to happen next month, we'll hold that street, and we have a street that we want to do now, we'll push it back a couple of months. Or if they clear something, we'll move a street up instead of holding it down and adjust as we can. There's also some additional Complete Streets projects that maybe aren't paving related. Maybe they're just concrete work, sidewalk work, curb and gutter. And in those cases, Complete Streets will still manage the project, but our group will perform maintenance inspections and manage the field work on those projects. Here's a couple of examples of some streets where we've pushed off the paving and so that we can implement a new striping plan that Complete Streets worked on. For example, Cameron Street before, we just had the wide lanes with the sharrows and parking on both sides. And then after the install, we restriped a buffered bike lane, and there's parking further up. So.
Is your question?
Sure.
When you do the PCI, does this something like this get bumped up higher because you can do other good things like you did here? Do you know what I mean? Like, if it's just a straight paving index, whatever that is, I don't even know what that is, and it goes from 0 to 100, is 100 bad? Or
100 is good.
Oh, okay.
So it's based on... go ahead.
So would this, like, I don't know, get 100 plus because you're doing other good things?
The PCI is more based on, it's based on the asphalt, the actual structure of the road, so the ride quality, how many potholes are there. So it's independent of pedestrian improvements or bike improvements or any kind of multimodal improvements that might be made. It's purely what's the ride like out there on the road.
This would be like a 100 plus something because you're doing another good thing.
Well, it is 100 now because you're paid.
Right, they repaved it, so now it is 100.
Yeah.
What it is they drive around a truck or a car with a digital sensor underneath, like a camera, and they drive over all the streets and they determine, like the staff said, whether the potholes, the condition of the pavement, everything else. So, like, the index, the numbers drop as the road gets worse during these assessments, and then they repave it, and then they determine which ones are the worst and decide to repave those. That's what it is. Not so much kind of... Yeah, it's like you said, it's mostly just about the ride on the road.
Nice.
It's not a maximizing equation that you can get more of
That's a good way of putting it.
Another part of your question. So, Complete Streets works very closely with our operations folks, and there are certainly times where they've held back on streets that they really want to resurface because Complete Streets program needs to complete some community outreach or get a design done, and then there are times where Complete Streets has a project that they're really eager to do, and they've helped push it up. So we work together very closely to figure out the best timing for, in order to get in the recommendations that we have in a lot of our plans.
Thank you.
Other than a full repaving, so this is talking about a schedule for full repaving of whole street segments. But sometimes there are just like dangerous potholes that are particularly dangerous for me when I'm like as a bicyclist. It's not so much dangerous for a car, but how does that fit in, like pothole filling in terms of annual schedule and how much money you guys have for that kind of thing when it's just like filling giant, crevasses that'll get you.
We have service requests that we receive throughout the year from the residents who can go into Poplar Connect. Mm-hmm. So we have a crew that can go out throughout the year and repair potholes. Right now, actually this week, we started our pothole patrol, blitz. Yay. So for the next 4 weeks, we have 3 crews that are out in the city just filling potholes. We have one crew that's dedicated to this service request that we've received, and we have other crews that are just driving the streets and repairing a mess they this time when the snow season ends and right before the paving kind of kicks into gear is when we try to get out and hit. We do this big blitz every year to try to get as many potholes as we can. And that comes out of our operating budget.
Okay. And have you ever experienced a lack of resources for that? Or is it just, it's fine?
So there's one other thing I wanted to add about the complete streets coordination. As you saw, the number of streets is obviously going up, and it's been difficult to keep up from a complete street standpoint with all of the roads that are being resurfaced. We're trying something new this spring. It's going to be a pilot, so we'll see how it goes, see what kind of tweaks we need to make. But we are planning on putting out a survey to the community with upcoming streets where people can input their improvements that they would like to see, challenges they're seeing on the streets. And while we're certainly not going to be able to do all of them, we will be looking at that to see, are there things that, you know, a lot of the smaller residential streets that there's no markings on them now because there's parking and they're narrow. You know, we might not do as much on those streets, but maybe there was a mid-block crosswalk that's needed that the residents know about. And so this is an opportunity to bring to staff's attention some of the improvements that could be made on all of the streets that are being resurfaced.
So it's still like the survey's tied back to your resurfacing schedule.
Right, so you'll only be able to comment on streets that are coming up in terms of resurfacing. Some of the things that we try and do on all streets, when there's a lot of missing crosswalks on side streets, if there are existing curb ramps, we try and put in crosswalks on those streets. We obviously upgrade all of the markings. We try and upgrade to high visibility crosswalks when it's a mid-block crossing. We work with the concrete crews to fix as many curb ramps as we can. We certainly can't replace every single curb ramp when we're out there, but we do as many as we can and kind of try and prioritize. The sidewalk maintenance is done as part of this as well, so tripping hazards, that they go out and walk the sidewalks and identify where tripping hazards are. So we think this will be a good tool to kind of get more input. On top of that, we also are looking at, like Mary mentioned, we are using GIS, and we have some of our plans the pedestrian case study areas from the pedestrian and bicycle master plan, the safe routes to school walk audit, so the recommendations that were that came to us through those plans. So all of those are mapped, and we're now looking at those in conjunction with resurfacing so we can coordinate better and try and get as much done as possible. So that will be coming out later this spring, and we'll see how it goes, and I'm sure we're going to need to tweak it you know, after this initial run, but it's our attempt to get that community input on all of our roadways.
That's great.
For the pilot, it's very exciting. I'm just curious, how are you guys thinking about promoting it? Is it something where, like, so many months before a new project, or is there kind of a big...
So we're still working out the timing of when does the street... So we're hoping the intent is that it'll be a link that's always live, and then we will update it with different streets. We'll try and put a deadline, you know, with associated with each street, so you know when that's going to come off the list and you can no longer comment on it. So, you know, some of the projects that we think are bigger projects, we might put them on there earlier so we can have a little more time. With this first one, we're a little late in getting this up and running, so some of the streets that they need to resurface, you know, in the first round, we'll only be up there for a couple weeks, but we are, we'll do an e-news that we'll then push out to as many folks as we can, and we'll email the Federation of Civic Associations and ask them, hey, is your street on here? Push this out. We'll have it on the Complete Streets website, and we'll have a link there to the Public Works website. Does a really good job of having that 3-week outlook of what's coming up there, and then their resurfacing schedule, so people will be able to go and say, oh, my road's, you know, coming up, I'll keep an eye out for this. So we're still trying to work out, you know, how often we would do kind of that blast of, hey, we've updated it, there's new streets on here, take a look. But that's our plan. That's the intent. So we'll see how it goes and how many comments we get.
When you're surveying residents along the abutting streets that are being resurfaced, I guess they got to have some way to look at the options, the bells and whistles that they might ask about.
It's kind of a checklist. You kind of go down and people can say, you know, here are my concerns and I would like to see more crosswalks on side streets, and there's a place where they can put in a location.
And there will be a website they can go to actually look at these choices.
A lot of this is on our Complete Streets website.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
We can add some of that to the resurfacing website. So what we want to do is have, from the Complete Streets page, there'll be a page specifically dedicated to resurfacing. This link will live there, and we'll have some information about the types of treatments. And the page will also have information about how we prioritize the comments, because we don't want, we're certainly not going to be able to do everything people request, but we will try and prioritize the request, and we will try and... we're looking at a way with a survey that we can then follow up with people that live on a certain street that wrote in on a certain street to let them know what was done. But that's a good idea to add some of the kind of maybe a picture of what a high visibility crosswalk is.
I was gonna say that I don't know what that is.
High visibility crosswalk?
Yeah, I know.
So the one on camera where you.
So just the zebra stripe that equals high visibility.
Right, so some crosswalks just have two lines, two edge lines.
Right.
And some have the ladder markings on.
The standard is we go to that for all of them, right?
No, it's not. No, high visibility crosswalk you don't want everywhere, because you don't want it to just be so common that people ignore it. You want to put them in places where you want people to really notice the crosswalk. So on a side street with very low volumes, vehicle volumes, low pedestrian volumes, you want to keep standard crosswalks. You want high visibility crosswalks where you have a lot of pedestrians crossing, or we always do our mid-block crossings. We try and make those high visibility because there's not, or if it's an uncontrolled crossing. So it's more visible to the driver that this is a place where people are going to be crossing, even if there's not a stop sign or a signal.
I'll have to think about that. I mean, I understand the logic and the rationale. I'm just not sure if it's true, like that there's somehow a like you want less, like that people would become numb to it if it were everywhere, because I feel like there are a lot of places in the city that just have regular ones, and anything that gets people, like, I don't even think of it as a crosswalk unless it looks like that. And so if it doesn't look like that, it's almost like they might not even see it. And so I don't know, but we don't have to.
Like you think about signage too. When you see the same signs everywhere, you stop paying attention to them because they're everywhere and they've become.
But just because there's a stop sign everywhere doesn't mean you just forget about it being a stop sign. You still have to stop. I mean, it's still the law.
Well, it's also a funding issue.
Tell the majority of drivers in Alexandria that.
Right.
It's also something that we have to prioritize based on what our funding is, because striping high visibility crosswalks.
And that's a different issue. But the philosophy about it versus, like, if the target is 100% and we just get there when we can get there because of financial, that's one thing. But if we have an actual, we're using a rationale that doesn't ever get us to 100% high visibility crosswalks, that's where I want to step back at some point, not tonight. And figure out if that's really
happy
like
for you
the
to
right
do the
approach.
Research and provide it to us.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll be like, no, I am of the opinion that everything should be high visibility crosswalks. But yeah, don't worry about it.
go ahead, please. What was that question there?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was probably well over a year ago, and I'm not sure whether it was in connection with the Complete Streets concept, but the use of the Alexandria's Call Click Connect for citizens to advance suggestions. And I like the one that you just proposed, the pilot, having a data-driven process. I think it's exceptional. It takes the bias away and allows you to quantify good decision-making. But if someone doesn't know about this other website, if they go to Call Click and Connect, would they be able to be diverted to this new one, or how would the two relate to one?
There's still, so Call Click Connect does have a Complete Streets transportation pedestrian. There's a number of different ways to get in touch with us through Call Click Connect. What we do want to be clear, and we'll try and make clear on the website, is this doesn't take the place of like a maintenance request. So just because you put something in the survey doesn't mean it's going to automatically get forwarded and put in as a ticket for a work order for something. So, you know, we have a number of different processes for things like traffic calming and speed cushions, and this is not kind of a catch-all through everything here and we're going to do it. We still have different processes that people have to go through to request that, and so the web page can direct them to that, and there's, you know, the link.
Just so they know, what's the immediate action?
Right, here are the things that we will, you know, that we're asking for in conjunction with the resurfacing specifically.
But it's a good idea, whatever marketing you can do and wherever it is. I know every time you go to put a link on and direct it to something else, it clutters up the site and it's more of an art than science, but it's an exceptional process that I hope it takes root and is productive as it sounds like it can be. Whatever we can do to help, put it on the agenda. Okay.
And I just have one more example of Police Street's coordination. So on the left we have King Street before we paved, and then what after it was completed, they we added the bike lanes and removed the parking. And then finally, just a little bit about how we measure our performance of our paving program. As I mentioned earlier, we have this pavement condition index, the PCI, which is rated from 1 to 100. And our goal here at the city is to have a 71. So our most recent in fiscal year 2016, when we had the consultant come in and drive the streets, that we were at a 58. We estimate in fiscal year 17 that we are at about a 61. We're going to redo that in fiscal year 19, which starts in July. So we should have a number probably in about a year. And then also the other goal that we have is to pave 70 lane miles per year, and we were able to achieve that goal.
Any questions for the staff?
So what is the general target for repavement of a street? About 8 years?
8 to 10 years.
So if we get 70 a year, 8 years we get 560. That's what we got.
That's good. That sounds pretty sustainable. We'll just keep the money flowing, everybody. Who has no control in this room?
I always think
some
about
of that money.
We can lobby and advocate.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other discussion on item five before we move on to the transportation LRP? All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I want to talk to you a little bit about the Long Range Transportation Plan, LRP. For those of you who are unfamiliar with what this is, the LRP is basically an unfunded, many times called unconstrained, list of transportation projects, programs, and studies that we put together and basically analyze, prioritize, and analyze. And back in 2016, staff decided, with the Transportation Commission, decided that we were going to do this process every 2 years. So, it is about time to start the process to think about the long-range transportation plan. And wanted to kind of like bring it up to you all. First of all, what we wanted to, staff wanted to, again, let you know what this is. It's basically a project list of capital projects which have not been funded, but that have been prioritized by the Transportation Commission. And it then, that, you know, gets that list and of programs, projects, and studies gets inputted into the CIP and into the budget process. So at the end of this process of the Transportation Long Range Plan, we would have guidance for including some of these projects in the budget. What has been the previous participation of this group, of this commission in the Long Range Plan? Basically developing project worksheets with details, holding work sessions to review some of the projects and not only review them but prioritize them. Consider packaging similar projects, for example, Vision Zero or Complete streets projects that might be similar could be packaged to increase efficiency, and also considering removing some projects that are no longer pertinent for the city or for the school. So we have, staff has developed a proposed 2018 LRP schedule that consists of, you know, basically going over what this is during this meeting, the overview, kind of like the scheduling, and requesting your guidance for this for the month of March. For April, we propose to review the methodology for prioritizing this projects, review draft of the LRP projects, and also remove anything that we don't think is pertinent. For May, we propose to finalize the screening of some of these projects, and by June, finalizing the list of projects and programs and studies, and having a public hearing to adopt the LRP for fiscal year 20. Is that correct? Fiscal year 20.
For the
right.
CIP.
For the CIP for the fiscal year 20. And so the reason why we have compressed this schedule prior, you know, compared to prior years, is because there have been discussions about moving the CIP approval to December of calendar year 2018 instead of June of 2019. And so I wanted to bring this up and have a discussion with the commissioners to get your guidance on this process.
I have a question. So is it, remind me how our long-range plan is related to regional funding of projects that we might be soliciting to support our capital program?
So a lot of these projects are projects that have not been identified for funding in previous years, or some projects that have been identified and applied for funding and mm-hmm. never got them, for example.
But they have to be in this plan to even be eligible for certain kinds of funding, isn't that right? In our long-range plan?
I'm not sure. There are, if it's which certain kinds of funding, there are grants that come about that projects have been put forth for those grants that are not in this plan. But when those grant applications are due and staff is looking at which projects to put in, mm-hmm. we do use this plan to see which of the projects that are listed in here and prioritized here fit the criteria of the specific grant, and that is where we get a lot of the ideas for grant applications.
Okay, but there's no official tie between this document and regional funding sources that would be funneled toward Alexandria.
I don't want to speak to every single regional funding source, because
not 100%.
No, not that I know. Yeah. And I can look into that to have a better answer, but obviously I wasn't here in 2016, but what I could research from last times, or from 2 years ago, was that a lot of these projects were coming out of studies that we have done in the city.
Right, yeah. I mean, the list that creates our LRP would be our needs.
Right.
But it's just a matter of making sure that we understand if it doesn't get into our LRP or it's low priority in the LRP, then I'm curious what impact that has on its potential eligibility for different kinds of funding sources that we have. But it might not be that close of a connection.
I don't think so. One of the things kind of related to this that I wanted to mention is there is a Commonwealth Transportation Board public hearing that's coming up for the Northern Virginia region, and so the CDB members for Northern Virginia are hosting a meeting with localities on April 26th to get their input for their upcoming FY19 through 24 plan.
Mm-hmm.
So the city will be involved in those meetings, and that's an opportunity to bring forward some of our larger projects that are unfunded to kind of push those through the CTV.
Okay.
Get those into their plans.
One question on this, and I've done this process twice now on the commission, so I'm pretty familiar with it. But one thing I've always thought about, and I don't know if this would be helpful for staff or not, is like breaking the list in half by, it's really hard to compare a $5 million project to a $200,000 bike lane project. Would it make sense if we were, you know, to split the list in some way? Because I remember last year, like, we were looking at two projects, and one was like the Van Dorn like bridge repair that was like $5+ million, and the other was like a home run trail where there was like already existing funding for it, and so it was like a $200,000 project. So would it be, just as we're starting to get this process started, would it be helpful for us to give you that bifurcated list, or does it not really matter? You're just kind of rolling through it when you guys have the grants coming up.
I think that if it's helpful for you all in terms of prioritizing, we can break it out, but we ultimately want one list, and some of the smaller projects might be a higher priority even if they're a lower cost. So whatever's helpful for you all in kind of getting that list, and maybe it's a it's breaking it out into high cost, low cost, and then meshing it back together. Maybe there's some kind of ranking you guys want to do. I'm not.
Then I would say it's easier to go with one list, because sort of the logic we ended up taking last year was like, I mean, what is the real difference on a list of 42 items between 5 and 6? Was sort of the logic we ended up taking on it. I just wasn't sure if it would be helpful for you guys if you're like, oh, this grant's under $500,000, so I want this list as opposed to the like million plus list.
Right. And that's something that we're gonna basically look and discuss in the next meeting at the methodology for actually coming up with the projects and prioritizing them. So this is something that we can further discuss. And we envision to send you a lot of the material between now and the next meeting so that we can get started and kind of like, you know, think about it ahead of time and be ready.
Yeah, that would be good because it is a pretty substantial chunk of information.
Right. That's correct.
We do have to make some tough decisions sometimes.
And if we decide that we want to change the methodology, that's something that we can do.
I was wondering, when the commission went through this last time, was there more opportunity for public feedback beyond the hearing? And if so, do we lose that with the compressed timeline? Or is this kind of the standard for when feedback is provided?
Well, at least in my opinion, it's been fairly recent that we've instituted the public comment period at the beginning of every meeting. It's, what, in the past 6 months?
Mm-hmm.
So before then, like, that never really happened. We'd have a public comment period when we were having a discussion specific to the LRP. However, we've never had like a monthly opportunity to do that. So to me, it feels like there's more of an opportunity now than before in that respect. Because you can come in here, and if you're actually paying attention to this, you can just come in, you know, any meeting and talk about it.
So as long as it's on each of those dockets, it gets published on the docket, then people would be able to come in, and even though there's no public hearing on the item, they could speak at the beginning and tell us what they thought about it.
Commissioner Duskins, can I ask you to, I would like to understand the rationale of your question. Are you concerned about the public weighing in on how we categorize this or prioritize this project, or?
Yes, I think I was, especially when it comes down to, I think you mentioned we could have a list of criteria or a ranking
right.
system, or how we might, once we get to a list, narrow this down. And while I recognize for each of these projects, there's already been a larger probably engagement piece that identified these as needs in
right.
the first place, just trying to understand how do we make sure that we have some of those perspectives and input as we kind of narrow down the list itself. And where that fit in.
It may be helpful to sort of explain how we've done it in the past. So the way it's worked in the past is we all get a Google spreadsheet with the list, and there are already predetermined criteria, and we rank them 1 to 5. And then we send those all to staff, and staff also does their own rankings. And then they sort of populate a list based on all of our numbers, and then there are multiple rounds of sort of us sitting around the table going through the list and public comment in on it. So sort of the like construction of the ranking system is sort of done on our own, and I always thought that was really helpful because there was a subcommittee of us that looked at this 2 years ago, and we decided to keep that system because we all sort of, like, at our own leisure get to look at the projects, think about them, and then it all sort of gets, like, sort of hive-minded together, and then we go through and sort of move things around from there. So there's a structured process to it, but there's also a lot of, like, open public engagement in the spreadsheet, because, like, the big spreadsheet you guys end up putting in our docket and everything.
So I guess to help me understand the process even more, so when we're approaching April and the methodology discussion, before that we'll get information,
right,
kind of all the background criteria,
right,
and then as it's published on the website, will it pull out kind of specific pieces, or like, what is that, what you're saying, that all of that's there and then specific pieces we're discussing? Like,
so we do it sort of project based.
Ranking background is there as well.
So you rank them based on safety, connectivity. There's five categories.
Yeah, so there's five categories that have been defined, and not that can't be improved, but I think circulate stuff way in advance, but the criteria, and that might help answer your question, because it does go through a ranking, as James suggested, based on some very well thought through criteria, and then each member will sort of rank it themselves. It gets summarized by staff, puts into a super list, and we kind of work on it from there. And the staff does, or I'm sorry, the public does get a chance to comment on it. But the criteria, I think, has been very well defined, and not that it can't be improved, but I'm not so sure what changes might be made at this point to it.
No, it's helpful to have that additional context and how all the pieces.
Maybe just the scoring system.
I need to look into it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
but that might help answer a lot of your concerns.
So what we could do is, like I said, we can in the next 2 weeks we can send out a package that has all that information for your whole
package. Well, that's fine.
And then for the next meeting we'll know what we need to discuss.
I could even send you a copy of, like, the old work that we did, if that would help. Because I have this stuff too. I'm pretty sure I have it on my drawing. I think. I'll find out.
Thank you.
But, yeah, I can do that.
So, any thoughts about the schedule?
Is everybody okay with the proposed schedule?
I think that's good. I think that gives us a lot of time to do what we need to do without dragging it out too much. There are other times where it took too long.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm fine with the schedule. I just have a technical question. Who else is on the review committee anymore? Because I know it was me and Jerry, and I think that was it. I think the committee may only be me now.
Okay.
So for the first part, if we were going to review the methodology, I don't know that we just did it 2 years ago, so I don't know that it necessarily needs to be done. But personally, since I'm on that subcommittee, I just don't know if we're going to be meeting. Because I think we met before the meeting the last time.
Okay.
So we met at like 6 o'clock to do it.
Yeah, I'd say there was a pre-meeting, if you'd like to call it that, that everyone was invited to, but it was an hour before the normal start time, so we'd go through that.
But yeah, I just don't know if that group is planning to meet again, because Jerry was the lead of it.
Okay. Let me look into whether there's another person that would be in that committee, and if not, we can...
I thought we were all...
Everyone was part of it, but there was like sort of like the three of us that were like.
It's you, Jerry, and Christine.
Yeah.
And I just want to stress that it is very important for us to do it early.
Yeah.
We want, you know, kind of like the guidance that comes out of this discussion and this process to inform the CIP process. That could be pushed few significant months earlier. Okay. All right.
Okay. Any further discussion on this item here?
No.
Okay. Anything else for other business?
I just had one comment because I know I was late, but I had a very small edit to the minutes, if it's not too late. But under my qualifications, it says I have qualifications in medicine and public health, and that should just be public health.
Okay.
You're like, I don't have
a
degree.
I am not a doctor. Go too far.
So, should I make a motion?
I was going to say to follow proper protocol, we should have a motion to amend the revised minutes that
the
have been adopted.
Minutes.
Approved minutes with the slightest change, as noted by Commissioner Gaskins. We have a motion.
Second? I'll carry the motion.
And I'll second.
I'm ahead of myself one step here. Okay, and you'll second. Good, okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. I know. Maybe the word circular. before we all skedaddle, I think everyone has a copy of the roster that was sent out. And if you didn't get one, and you may not have been on it because of when it was sent out, but if you need a copy, if you could let us know.
Okay.
And this way it just has everyone's contact information now that we're a full group here. And as far as attendance, if you're not going to make a meeting, if you can let Romero and I know this way, if there's an item that needs our vote, we'll be in a position to either shift it back in the event someone's running late, or if it looks like we're not going to have a quorum, we'll just have the table to the next meeting. But this way, we won't have to adjust our the voting. And since we do have some new members, would it be helpful just to have a short segment on the duties and responsibilities that we are subject to as the Transportation Commission, or are we okay? It was 2 years ago, I think, we had a retreat where this was covered far more in depth, and we went through the voting process, and at some point we should probably entertain that. But would it be helpful just to have a short presentation on what we're here for, what sort of what our scope is?
I would appreciate it.
Okay. Can we look for staff for a short, maybe 15-minute presentation on who we are, what we are, what we are here to do?
Sounds good.
Great. Thank you. Anything else? Motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second? Thank you. I'm sorry. You'll have to fight for yourself.
I need to get one. All right.
Aye.
Are we done? See you all next month.
The NDA revised methodology for selecting.
Thank you. Everybody, I will send you an email.
Yeah. Sure, we're going to
you. You've got to write the name of our trips to Australia. You've got to write every project. Every project gets at least one. But after that, you can load them up.
I've been on for a while. I've been on second term.
Put them all in the jar. Rotate the thing.
That's how we'll decide which ones we're going to find the grants for. I love it.
And it looks like
I was talking about this.
You work on stage planning?
I do, not in planning. I feel like this is more of a
logistics and transportation.
I think I know a few of them have come off based on like the grant stuff. But yeah, I think it was a different time when you know the top five things actually were really good.
Utilize everything, and this is a good. Get a one contribute back to the city, so
don't get a dime. Bottom of it.
I live up in the northeast.
No, this Route 1 south thing.
Okay. Yes.
There's a fundamental side that have a little problem. We're trying
to
neighborhood character. But we are doing
what about you guys? Where are you guys?
Route 1 that is both.
I'm
joined
Jake
and there's a car.
Yeah.
I've got Steven.
Yes. You guys were in
compromise.
I read the miniature.
The capacity of the road is
not going to happen.
Which is why I think that the striping.